Okay, thank you for joining us. Tonight's shiur, sponsored, number one, by Alan and Debbie Kay, commemorating the yahrzeit of Alan's mother, Henya Bas Menachem, Helen Kay, Monday night. By Mati and Beth Friedman, memory of the recent passing of both of their fathers, Rabbi Nachman Chaim Miriam and Rabbi Shua Heschel ben Yehuda Aryeh Ubracha, Milton Nordlicht and Yoshua Friedman, and also by Sarah and Ben Zinjurian, in memory of Moshe Yehuda ben Meir Elio, our friend Yehuda Frankel, Al Vashalom, as well as Ben's great-grandfather, Usher ben Yehuda, and Shalom ben Yosef Zalman, both of whom yahrzeits were recently observed, or today, one of them was today. I'm sorry, coming up this week. Okay, thank you so much for the sponsorships, the Neshama Shav and Aliyah, and the schluss of our Torah learning, and we should see in the schluss of the learning, Yeshua's for Klal Yisrael. We are on 47B. The last thing we did on Mem Zayin and Beis was discuss who is acceptable to join a Zimun. Who are we allowed to include in the Zimun? And if you can't hear me in the back, please let me know. We said we had to define what an Am HaAretz is, and the Gemara gives a whole about 8 different opinions as to what qualifies as an Am HaAretz we normally exclude. We said practically it's already been generations and generations, centuries, since we have practiced this halacha, because if it is exercised inappropriately, we will end up alienating people who would otherwise maybe be able to be brought back into the fold. So we're careful not to do so in a way that will that will alienate. But it's interesting just to note the last opinion that we read. If you want to pick up, we are, before the lines get wide. The last thing we read last time was Amar Rav Huna Halacha Ka'achirim. Okay, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's about 10 lines up from where the lines begin to get wide. The last opinion that we quoted, the last two opinions were number one, Rabbi Nassim bar Yosef Omer Kol Sheyesh Lo Banim Ve'Eino Megadel Matalmud Torah. Anyone who has children and the father does not send them to have a Jewish education to learn Torah, that's an Am HaAretz. Okay, so you see, it's not a question of doing this mitzvah or that mitzvah, but he doesn't have an appreciation of the value of the Jewish education. The last opinion, Acherim, who we paskin like, is that the definition of an Am HaAretz is someone who has Kara, he learned, he knows all Tanakh, Shina, he knows all the Mishnayos, but he was not Mishamish Talmid HaChacham, he did not serve Talmid HaChacham. So it's kind of funny, because it sounds like a pretty tall order to say that he has familiarity with a wide corpus of Torah, but he didn't bring a cup of coffee to his Rebbe at the beginning of Shir. That's what it means. So this terminology, to be Mishamish Talmid HaChachamim, definitely has different meanings in different places. Sometimes it means that, if you spend some of the extracurricular hours with your Rebbe, if you find other ways to interact with him outside of the shir, so there's certain midos, there's certain attitudes, there's certain perspectives and hashkafa that also need to be communicated beyond the books. Okay, so that's definitely a critical point. However, you look at Rashi says something very interesting. He says, what does it mean to be someone who is not mishamish tamid chachamim? It means that Hu Talmud Hatali Basvara. It means that he did not study Talmud, which is dependent on logic. Shayunosnim Ladivrei HaMishnah Tam. They would give the Mishnayos reasons. Meaning, if you read a Mishnah, Mishnahs are generally very short and to the point. They give you halacha. But as we know from Shas, most of Shas is, well, you have this Mishnah, and I have that Mishnah, and I have another Brisa, and they don't all line up with each other. And what comes out from, when the dust settles and we put them all together? This is similar to the Gemara that the Amorayim organized. In other words, before there was a book called Talmud Bavli, so the curriculum was you sat in the Beis Medrash, they reviewed the Mishnayos, Baal Peh, and you had people who were experts who knew it all at the top of their head, and anytime a sugya came up, we'd say, okay, give us everything you know on this subject, and they would call out the Mishnayos and the Brises. But we had to reconcile the ones that contradicted with each other. We had to figure out, do we possibly like this opinion or that opinion? The process of sorting all that out is Gemara, which is why the text of our Gemara is, it's fluid. It's a conversation, right? When you open a Gemara, you're jumping into the Beis Medrash and you're seeing that the back and forth. The reason for that is because the true achievement in learning, what Rashi's telling us is, not just knowing information. That knowledge base is critical. Right, that's why the Mishnah says you're supposed to know all the Mishnayos by the time you're what is it, 8 years old, 5 years old Tanakh, 8 years old Mishnayos, right? And then you can start learning for real, right? But you have to know your ABCs.
Okay, and there are some yeshivas nowadays who try to follow those instructions, and you meet these kids. Yeah, you meet these kids who they're a lot younger than we are, and they know a lot more than we do. It's amazing, but you need that basis in order to have a conversation called Talmud. So that means that Gemara is the hallmark of someone who has reached beyond that level of amaratzis. The more you learn, the more you put all the information that you have together. Just want to add, Ramosha Feinstein has a tshuva. I gave it out last week. I don't know where those copies went, but I'll just read a little piece of it.
They're on the WhatsApp.
Oh, okay, thank you. So if you want to look at your phone, I don't take responsibility, but Gil does. So Ramosha was asked to explain the value of Gemara versus other parts of the curriculum. He quotes our sugya. He quotes the Rashi we just mentioned, and he says the following. It's just important, methodologically, and also just to understand the development of Torah Shabbat Peh. He says, Kfar amarti kama pamim. I've already explained many times elsewhere in my svarim, the Igros Moshe, sha'af bizmanenu shukvar nechtu kol ha'shas. See, nowadays, everything's in print. We already have a shas, right? So what are we doing here? What are we doing? So he says that we have the Piskei HaGaonim and the Rif and the Rambam and the Rosh and the Torah. Generation after generation, centuries have already given us super commentaries and Pesach Halacha and all the Mefarshim on top of those. When we're sitting in the Beis Medrash in the middle of a shiur right now, we are writing the next generation of Torah Shabbat Peh. When Ravina and Rav Ashi composed the Talmud Bavli, that doesn't mean that was the end of Torah Shabbat Peh. On the contrary, we are still living that process right now. What's that? Okay, right. Meaning there's certain things that maybe are, the end of the line. If the Gemara comes to a certain conclusion, you can't say, I disagree. Okay? There's a certain precedent that has been set. That's how most understand it. But in any case, not everyone agrees with that, believe it or not. Okay. There's a rush in Sanhedrin. But that's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, Sofo Ra. The Ravina Rashi were Sofo Ra. That's it. You can't argue with the Gemara. But that doesn't mean that Torah Shabbat Peh is finished. We are part of the process of Torah Shabbat Peh. And he says that's why even what's described over here of those interactions with Talmidei Chacham is critical, because you're not just downloading a file that's already been sealed, but you still have the capacity to contribute to that ever-expanding and evolving Torah Shabbat Peh, but you still need the Shimush Talmidei Chacham and that Rashi that the Gemara is describing, that interaction. He says, that's why Gemara and Shimush Talmidei Chacham are synonymous. He says you still need a verbal interaction, conversation. He says because even when it's on the page and I can read it, I can memorize it, I can know the art scroll, but if you don't know how to process it, if you don't know what to do with it, it's a lot of information, but for our generation, Gemara means now what do you do with that information? How do I really understand it? And not simply the face value, the push out of the words. You can't learn alone. You need a chavrusa. You need to have other people to talk to hash things out. Let me hear how you heard it, how you understood it. And that, when you put it all together, the product is something which is a never-ending story that we are part of. And he concludes by saying that he says, Ikur Gadol B'Limratar. This is, please listen to this, the final statement. He says the most important thing to remember is that it is possible to create chidushim. Every single one of us in this room, which by the way, Chaim Golovkin says, a chidush doesn't mean, wow, some new concept no one has ever heard of before. A chidush means, this is what he says, students of all ages, chidushim, should write chidushi Torah, meaning they should, in their own words, in a notebook, write over the shock of attire, the question and the answer for clarity. A chidush Torah includes simply recording the process so that you have clarity, because we understand it much better when we can talk it out, when we can outline it. Afi me zikna b'seva. It doesn't matter how old you are, even in an older age, you can still be mezgada b'chol yom yoser mikvisha haya esmo. You can become greater than you were yesterday. Shanasa la'atzmo tarvayu ravatam. You can be your own Rebbe and your own student. As time goes on, you're teaching yourself more and more and more, because you might have heard a shir last week or last year, a million years ago, but whatever your brain was inculcated, the way you trained yourself to think based on that shir will then impact how you understand the next piece of Torah that you learn. So it's a never-ending process. Thank you very much for the schus to be able to join with you in that endeavor. Let's continue with the Gemara. Okay, we are about 10.
The next tshuva sounds
interesting. Yes, the next tshuva is a student, 1981. Choice between, it's seemingly, I can't tell if he's an American or an Israeli, but a boy learning in Netiv Meir, famous yeshiva in Yerushalayim, high school. And he wrote a tshuva, he wrote a question to Moshe. I don't know why he wrote the question from, okay, I don't, maybe, I'm not sure. Should I go to the army or should I stay here, okay? So this is a very hot topic right now, unless you're living in a cave. So I'll give you a quick summary. Moshe has a strong language. He says, even though to go to the army is an inyan gadol, it's very important, but Talmud Torah is also even greater than that and even more effective in protecting the Medina. And he says, apparently, the Memshala recognizes that as well because they give an exemption. They give an exemption for those who are learning in the Yeshiva Gedola and they're learning Torah from participating in the army. So he says, therefore, v'chein vadai, for sure, mishiyeshul chuka lelimud haTorah. This is key. Yeah, Ramosha is very, very precise. He says, if a person has a strong desire to learn, v'le'asos gadol b'Torah, and to become a great in Torah, u'b'hora, and psak, and yir shemayim, yeshul le'ayach li'yishiv as a goal. So then he should go, and there'll be a bracha and a protection, v'hagana gadolah l'kol Yisrael. Okay, so he's qualifying. He's the guy, you know, hopefully everyone agrees that if a person is fit for that task, he's up for that challenge, yes. Does it mean that you should do that if you are not so serious about learning? That's not what Ramosh is talking about. Ramosh is talking about someone who is determined and focused to grow in Torah. Okay, let's get back to our sugya. 10 lines before the lines get wide. So again, we said halacha kacherim, we paskin like the last opinion in the Tanoim, that the final definition of an Am Haaretz is someone who is kor v'shina v'loshimesh talmidei chachamim. No, you asked me that last week. Rameir spoke earlier in the... remind me, I'll tell you what the acronym say. Because Rameir spoke at the beginning, he said, if you don't separate your Trumas and Mises or whatever, you're in trouble. Good. Belina, I'll try to get you another time. Sorry. Sam. Okay, can I get you Gemara? I feel bad.
No,
do you have
I'm
an extra?
I'm listening intently.
Okay.
I'm sharing.
That's very impressive. Okay. Halavai, I should be Zocha. Zakti Gemara, Amra, Huna, Lachika, Chayim, Rami, Barchama, Lo, Azmin, Alei, Dera, Menasya, Bar, Tachlifa. Rami, Barchama would not include Rav Menasseh bar Tachlifa in a Zimun. Okay? Ostensibly because of this disqualification called Am Haaretz. The Tani Sifra, the Sifri, he knew all the Midrashim. Sifra and Sifri are the Midrashay Halacha that go through the Psukim and Vayikra and Bamidbar and Devarim and extract all of Torah Shabbat Peh, all the Dinim that we know. The Hilchasa, and he also knew all the Halachos. What that means exactly, it could mean he knew all the Halacha Moshe Misinai, we often refer to as Hilchasas, or it means he knew all the Mishnayos, all the practical Halachas. When Ram Verchama died, Amar Rav, Rav declared, Lo Nachnashe Dram Verchama, Ed Lo Azmin Arab Menasseh Bar Tachlifa. Rav declared that, you know why he died? As a result of the fact that he excluded Rav Menasseh from being in the Zimun. V'hasanya, then we learn the Braisa, Achirim Omrim, Afilu Kar V'shina, V'loshim, Yitra Mitech Chacham, Reza Amar Aretz. Didn't we say a few lines ago, right? Apparently, he understood that Rav Menasseh fell in that category of someone who is an Am Haaretz and therefore should not be included in the Zimun. So what did he do wrong? What do you want from him? Answers the Gemara, Shani Rav Menasseh bar Tachlifa demashma lo rabbanon v'rami bar Chama hud lo dak abasrei. The problem was, Rami bar Chama did not do his due diligence in a background check over here to determine whether or not Rav Menasseh was in fact an Am Haaretz or he was not. So he had this impression that he was an Am Haaretz and he left him out. He didn't include him in the Zimun. However, the truth was, it was accepted in the society of Chachamim that he knew his stuff, and he should have been at that level. Lish Nachrin, a different version of the story. Shama Shmaitzam Mipumayu Drabanan. He heard all the discussions of the Chachamim, meaning maybe he didn't participate in the back and forth of Gemara that we described before, but he was on the sidelines. Okay, he was in the base medrash paying attention. Begaris Lahu Kitsuver Mirabanan Dami. So since he was familiar with the discussion, even if he wasn't a player as much, but he still had the knowledge that made him no longer an Am Haaretz. And yes, to the discredit of Rav Tachlifa, right? Who is it? I'm sorry, Rami bar Chama. He was not recognized as such, and that was chaval. Okay, so before you declare someone Am Haaretz, do your homework first. Okay, very important. Okay. What's that?
Due diligence,
100%, 100%. Just parenthetically, the Meiri says, you know, we discussed last week some of the reasons why we don't practice this Am Haaretz exclusion anymore. The Meiri says something bold. He says the truth is this Am Haaretz exclusion has not existed since the time of the Gemara. I mean, we have an example here, but he said since then, no. Why? Because since the Gemara was finished, we don't practice really a Tumah V'Tahara anymore. The laws of purity and impurity don't apply anymore. And that was one of the major reasons. We said last time that the exclusion of the Am Haaretz was because, you know, you have to be in proper company. The Talmud Chacham has to sometimes make social barriers, you know, that are for the sake of the promotion of proper behavior and demonstrating, you know, who are our role models. But there's another reason. The Meiri says it was more just for the practical reason. The Am Haaretz, if this is the case in the Mishnah, if he spits on you by accident, okay, if he, you know, as they say, you know, say it, don't spray it. He's talking to you, and, you know, and some of it lands on your clothing, your clothing becomes tummy. Okay? So they couldn't eat together because practically they had to maintain different halachos. Okay? So the Meiri says, but if we don't practice Tumah V'Tahara anymore, that pulls the rug out from this whole discussion. Okay? Fine. Continues the Gemara. We are at the...
Why exactly did they think he was an Amharic?
What's that?
What was the reason why they thought he was an
Amharic? Maybe. I'm not sure. You get a little hint from the second version, which was that he didn't participate in the conversation. At Kamash Malon, yeah, but if he knew what was flying, you know, there's always that quiet guy in the shir who he knows exactly what's happening, you know, but he keeps to himself.
What if one make a fool of himself?
Okay. All right, here we go. I just mentioned Rav Shefter said that one definition of low of Einam Shamish Tamid HaChamim Bizman Hazeh is someone who gives his own interpretations in Tanakh without feeling beholden to the classic commentaries on Tanakh, which has, I think, throughout history, the last few hundred years, you know, certainly in Reform Bible criticism, you know, it emerged from people saying, Rashi, I'm telling you what the pshat is. No, you know, we have a little more respect for our Masorah. Okay. Yeah, okay, Malbim, yeah. Very good. Okay, so the Gemara says, the next line of the Mishnah, we're going back to that Mishnah, which gives us the meals or the circumstances where we do not have Izima. Okay? So here we're on Tevel. Tevel and Maiser, right? Tevel and Maiser. Shane, Tevel, Gemara says, Tevel, Pshita, isn't it obvious? Tevel, what Tevel? You haven't separated the Truma and the Maiser and so forth from the food, which is essentially prohibited, right? No one can eat from that. No one can eat from that. So the Gemara says, Lo Tzricha, B'Tevel, Tavim D'Rabbanan. We're not talking about regular Tevel. Tevel Do Raisa, for sure. I wouldn't have any question that if it's prohibited food, we can't have a Zimun. Torah doesn't recognize that type of chabura, that's eating non-kosher. But if it's Tevel Midrabanan, what's Tevel Midrabanan? Meaning that it's still food that is untithed, okay? But it's food that was never obligated to be tithed in the first place on a Doraisa level. What's an example? Gemara says, Otzit She'eino Nakav. Otzit She'eino Nakav is a flower pot that has no breathing holes underneath it, okay? Meaning sometimes you buy one, you know, from Home Depot, has holes on the bottom, so when you water the plants, the water goes out the bottom. So let's say I would have a planter, okay, and I would place it in my backyard on the grass, okay. So because there is still a passage of nutrients and air and whatever through those holes, so that essentially, even if it's not rooted into the ground, okay, you know, but it still draws nourishment from the earth. That is considered attached to the ground. So therefore, something that grows in a planter has the same obligations of truma, meiser, etc. Interesting chiddush. If I would lift that planter off the ground and put it on my patio, okay, or bring it to my house, on Shabbos, that would be a violation of the Isser of Kotzer. Because so seriously do we take that connection that it's like I disconnected from the ground because it otherwise would draw on the nutrients from the soil. If you had a pot which was not porous, okay, it was, you know, just plastic, no holes on the bottom, that is what we call an otzutz she'eino nakuv. It's a flower pot that does not have any holes on the bottom, and that is not considered midoraisa in the ground. It's midorabon in the ground. So therefore you it would not be otzutz deraisa to move. It would only be midorabonon. And the produce that comes from that flower pot is only obligated midrabanan in Truman Meiser. There's a pasuk. Okay, Sam, I was hoping you'd what does it say in Parshas Re'eh? The pasuk that tells us that we're pasuk is, how's it go? Pasuk says, Aser Taser Eitzvas Arecha Yotze Hasadeh. Aser Taser. Okay, I wasn't trying to favor one Balkari over another. Sorry about that. Okay. He didn't have a Gemara, so I had to at least give him a Chumash. Okay. Aser Taser, everyone knows this. You know, if you pay attention on Yom Tov, okay? Aser Taser, Eitzvas Arecha, Parshas Re'eh, you should certainly take Truman Meiser off of the produce. Hayotzei hasadeh, that comes out from the field every year. So is this from the field? No, it's from my flower pot. If it's not halachically considered connected to the ground, so that's not coming from the field, that's coming from the flower pot. Okay? There may be exceptions if it's an clay flower pot. Okay, what do you call that? Earthenware? I don't know. You know, earthenware, cheres. What's it called?
Terracotta.
Ooh, okay, that's what I was looking for. Okay? So that is considered porous or whatever. It's not considered being mafsik and separating the whatever nutrients it would draw from the soil. Right. That's one of the reasons why sometimes, let's say, they'll bury items in cheres, in earthenware, like a tefillin. They'll bury sometimes in tefillin because it's considered, even if it's enclosed in something, but it's still considered in the ground. Okay, the clay, just because I formed a pot out of it, doesn't mean it's not the same earth. Okay,
if it's sitting under your piano, is it still considered attached to the ground?
Your piano, and there's wood.
It's sitting in the house on a piano, right, and it's still got a hole. Is that halachically considered?
No, well, there's no exposed soil. It has to somehow...
It's not getting any nutrients from anywhere.
Right. If it's not on top of a piano, you can't. It's not connected to the ground.
I understand.
Right.
I just somehow... Yeah.
No. This is very important when it comes to Shemitah. In some of the farms in Eretz Yisrael, they use a system called Matzah Menutak. Matzah Menutak means they take a tarp. They take a tarp and they lay it down on a farming area, or it's usually in a greenhouse, and they'll put mulch and wood chips on top of it. And the agricultural technology has progressed that they can plant certain crops in the mulch. Okay, but the mulch is disconnected from the ground because there's a tarp there, which is plastic. Okay, so plastic doesn't fit for our definition of what still maintains that connection. So that's one way they, I like to use the term, get around Shemitah, but you can theoretically produce fruits and vegetables that aren't subject to Shemitah with a process like that. And there are places in Israel where they do that. Okay, and likewise, anything that is exempt from Shemitah would be exempt from Truman Weiser, which is what we're talking about.
That's if they grow stuff from the air.
Like a hydroponics and things.
Yeah, they do.
In the air or from the air?
Basically, it's just getting the water from the greenhouse. But there's no earth, there's no dirt.
If it's disconnected from the earth totally, then some of those situations would be exempt.
Yeah, that
sounds
same idea. Hydroponics in theory is disconnected from the earth. This has a fascinating nafkamina. Okay, I know we're going off a little bit of a tangent, but I don't know. I think we're right back where we started. Baruch Hashem, this is a lot of interesting stuff here. There is a statement from the Chai Adam. Chai Adam lived at the same time as the Vilna Gaon, about 200 and a little more, 210, 220. They were Mechutanim. The Chai Adam, before the Mishnah Berurah was published, the Chai Adam was the Sefer Halacha. That was the go-to. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch was in Germany. The Chai Adam was in Lithuania. He was, the easy, laid-out, organized halachos, for practical halacha. But he was a businessman. But he was a big Talmud Chacham, and he was a mechutan with the Vilna Gaon. So he suggests an interesting chiddush. He says, based on this concept, so he says, what if I have bread? We'll make it a modern example, hydroponics, something like that. What if I have bread where the wheat was grown, not in the ground? Can I really say, hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz? If I have a cucumber, can I really say, borei pri ha'adama? Okay, and he felt very strong. He said, you can bench. He said, you can bench afterwards. You still v'chalta v'savata v'irachta. Okay, it's still physically bread, and therefore it's what the Torah describes. But it's not hamotzi. I think he makes that distinction. But he can't say hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz. And this is something which has major implications. I remember, 15, 20 years ago. This is nogea to what they were growing in Gush Katif. In Gush Katif, they had these right. That's how they made them bug free. Because they weren't in the soil, right? So the question is, do you make adama on that lettuce? And by extension, if you want to use romaine lettuce from Gush Katif at the Seder, right, we have a, you may not know this, but, you know, between the lines of the Seder, right, it says in the Haggadah, when you make Adama on the Maror, you should have in mind that the it goes on the Karp, I'm sorry, when you make Adama on the Karpas, that goes on the Maror as well, Adama. But what if your Maror is not actually Adama? It's Shahakal, right? Okay, so... Hundred percent.
That,
that is a fair argument. Yeah, yeah. You're not the only one who says so. 100%. That's a valid approach, and not everyone agrees with the Chai Adam at all. But where the Chai Adam is coming from, and this is a discussion for another time, is that let's say Bori Pri Ha'itz. Anything, I'm cutting to the, this is a 45-minute shiur. I'm going to give you the punchline that that Rav Tversky once explained. He said, it's very interesting. We have a lot of things we just make a shahakal on, right? And everything else gets a very specific bracha, right? So let's take meat, right? How come meat can't get, meat is like, you know, a lot more chashuv than an apple, right? How come it doesn't get its own bracha? So he said, and there's brilliant rise to this. This is, I'm just getting excited just thinking about this chiddush. He said, Bore Pri Ha'etz means HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the trees and the apples and everything you eat from, you know, from the orchard. When Hashem created a cow, it was not meant to be eaten. Bore is HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the creator of all these different species and minim, right? There was a certain purpose in that creation that was specific to the agriculture. And things like livestock, whatever, meat, Adam Rishon was not supposed to eat that. That was a second thought later after the Mabul, whatever, you know. But fundamentally, anything you make a shahakal on is at very least not in its original form intended to be consumed. Think about it. Anything that you make a shahakal on is not in its independent... Mushrooms. Mushrooms is a lie against what you said. What
comes from the...
Gevaldik, we don't make Adam on mushrooms because it doesn't draw nutrients from the ground.
Yes.
Okay, so that's exactly the point. So in the Chai Adam, he's thinking, why my hydroponics, it's no worse than a mushroom. I don't make a Bori Pri Ha'etz on a mushroom, even though I can look and it seems as if it's growing from the ground, right? So if you think about, I once suggested to Tversky, this was going to be one of the nighttime shiurim on Shavuos, so don't come because I guess I'll have to talk about it another time. But maybe that's the reason why the poskim discuss, why is it we make a bracha on. Make a bracha on flowers, a bracha of reyach, flowers, spices, things like that, besamim. I want to make a bracha on a geshmak cholent. Okay? When was the last time you walked into your house Friday afternoon? Ah, the cloves. No one does that, right? I don't even know why we use cloves for besamim, but that, you know, many Yisraels use cloves. Okay. I like cinnamon a little bit better. But a cholent, Friday afternoon, that's a reyach. So I suggested to him that maybe it's the same yisod, the same idea, that certain things were created to give off a smell in their original form. A fatty piece of flanken wasn't the original purpose. To inhale the aroma of cooking meat was not part of the, you know, creation, so to speak. Okay, something to think about. I'm afraid, what? Yeah, go ahead.
Cooking meat was like a...
What's that?
Yeah, but isn't that the carbonos?
Okay,
yeah.
Something to think about.
Used, how they meat was used, cooked for carbonos.
It actually says, yeah, it actually says, doesn't it say in the Medrash that the...
Not literal.
It's not literal. Right, Hashem can't smell. Hashem can't actually smell. That's true. Doesn't it say in the Medrash that the malachim were so overtaken by Adam HaRishon before the chait, he appeared as if he was like almost a god. And it says they were roasting meat for him. Doesn't it say in the Medrash? I don't have to think about that, how that fits with... yes?
It's understandable about the behemoth not being meant to eat initially.
Yeah.
But what about fish? Fish is also shahakal, and fish really can't serve man except to be eaten.
Exactly. But Hashem did not, not that I know of, I mean, he did not authorize man to eat fish in creation. Man was supposed to be a vegetarian, it seems, from the Pesukim. Right? I guess.
True vegetarian.
True vegetarian, right? Okay, one last point on this line. Let's just consider for a second. Let's try to get back into the flow of the Gemara. The Gemara said, we have a mission that says, if there's three people sitting around a table eating tevel, then three people eating tevel, you cannot make a zimun, because it's also, you can't make a zimun on something that you're not supposed to be eating in the first place. We discussed machlokes rishonim, whether you make a bracha on something that is aser. Okay, right? Good. So, question is, why is it better? The Gemara says, oh, no, we're talking about tevel midrabanan. We're talking about produce that grew in a flower pot. So it's not obligated, you know, that truman mice is not obligated, you know, in the same way midaraisa, so it's only treif midrabanan. My favorite treif midrabanan, chicken cheeseburger. Okay, you know, it's still treif, right? Now, what was the Gemara thinking that sort of downgraded our expectations that I have a havamina, oh, it's only tevel midrabanan, and therefore I can make brachas, I can make a zimun on it. So at face value, this relates to what we spoke about on Tanis Esther. I know not everyone was here for that, about demai. Something which is asur midrabanan, okay? It's qualitatively different than something that's asur midrabanan. So I'll give you the following. This is awesome. Okay, this is awesome. Halach and Shulchan Aruch. If I'm a shochet, okay, and I sell meat that was not properly shechted, okay, and you find out, you can ask for your money back. Okay, because it says on my window, Buster Kusher or Buster Buster, whatever they used to write, you know, in the Lower East Side.
Busa
Kusher, yeah, okay. But so that's what your expectation is. So if you don't get what you paid for, then you get your money back. The Nesipas HaMishpat is one of the primary commentaries on Shulchan Aruch Choshen Mishpat, monetary halacha, right? You have the Shach and the Sma. Those are the main commentaries on the side. On the bottom, you have the Ktsos and the Nesipas, and they're always fighting things out. So the Sivas has the following suggestion. He says, this is true that you get your money back if you got the treif meat. But he says, let's say it turns out it's only treif meat derabanan. Okay, now granted, you still can't eat. If you're a religious Jew, you don't eat treif derabanan either. Okay? But I ate it not knowing it, right? When I come back to the shochet and say, you sold me meat and I had it for Shabbos, that's treif derabanan, I want my money back. Nesipa says, you don't have a claim to get your money back. He said, what do you mean? Bus or kosher, right? What's the difference? Either it's kosher or not kosher. So he says something unbelievable. He says, when the Torah tells you this meat is treif, for whatever reason, there's a hole in the lung, it's not healthy, it's a cow, it's not a cow, it's a horse. Okay, whatever reason, when the Torah says you can't eat this meat, it means intrinsically, what you do wrong when you eat that meat is you ingest contraband. You ingest what the Rabbonu Shalom says a Jew may never put in his body. If I have food that's only asur midrabanan, so at its core, what did I violate when I ingested that food? Can we say that it's intrinsically poison the same way that horse meat is? No? So how would you define, how would you label or categorize the nature of what I did wrong when I ate something that's asur midrabanan? Oh, it's a rebellion against the will of the Chachamim. They made a takana. They made they established the behavior, and I went against their authority. But if I didn't know about it because it was b'shogeg, I was under the impression it was kosher, it had an OU on it, I only found out later it wasn't. If a tree falls in the forest, yeah, if you violate Isur Drabbanon and you didn't know, did you really do an Avera? But essentially what you did was nothing wrong. It smells like kosher meat. It tastes like kosher meat. But you can't, to get your money back, you have to say, I got a lemon. There was something qualitatively wrong with what you sold me that made a difference. If I didn't realize that what I was eating, again, not everyone agrees to this chiddush. But let's try to extract the yisod. If I didn't know what I was doing when I ate something, I didn't know what I was doing when I violated the Isur Drabbanan, I didn't really do anything wrong. Because unlike something which is intrinsically treif, this is something which is only prohibited insofar as I am clashing with what the rabbis want me to do. So if I didn't because it was b'shogeg, so then there's nothing wrong with what I did. That's his suggestion. If you take that approach, let me just finish your punchline, go back to Gemara, I'll take one thing, Matthew, I'm sorry. If you take that, you know, to the next step, that's what the Gemara means when it says, oh, tevel midrabanan, that I thought maybe you could make a zimun on that, because essentially the food is kosher. Essentially, the food is kosher. It's not that intrinsically what we're eating is treif, exactly. Right? There, it's maybe only something that is intrinsically usher. Midoraisa, the Rabbanim don't necessarily have a koach to make something intrinsically usher. So the meal that we had was not a was we'll say cannot be excluded from zivan. That was a havmina kamashmon. This type of isser also. If you ate it, if I ate both, even if I ate the tray food already, of course I get my money back. You, that guy in Muncie, you know, why do you run away to wherever he ran away to, you know, because, okay, I mean, there are probably many reasons why he did, you know, but if I would say it's even worse, if you sold me a tray of meat, if I didn't eat it yet, I don't have to give the money. I mean, we'll make an exchange. But if I ate the... The Havamina is that an Isra Drabbanan is so qualitatively different that at least it would still permit a Zimun to occur.
If they went in eating knowing that it's
Tabu even maybe, but I'm not sure that makes a difference. Let's say they find out afterwards. Let's say if you want to make a real glot comparison to our case, okay, then maybe. Okay, I like what that brings out the essence of what we're saying. Yeah, I'm sorry, Matthew. So there's a little bit of a paradox. 100,000% what you're saying is correct. The Rabbanans always have to be patterned after the Raisa. However, we also know that Safak the Raisa l'chomra, Safak the Rabbanan l'kula. There was a mandate, we've discussed this in the past, right? We said that the way the Rambam understands Baal Tosef, it means you can't equate a Doraisa with the Rabbanan 100%, because that would sound like I'm just adding more 614 mitzvahs, right? So that works for us 95% of the time. But in a situation like this, it doesn't mean that they are Hashem. They can't mamash do it. So we draw the line somewhere. Yes, Gil.
Would you be entitled to a full refund, or would you just be entitled to the difference between kosher meat and what you would sell to do?
So that's what I was trying to say to Steve. Let's say before I ate it, I realized, somehow I figured out it was treif d'rabbanan. So he could say, you know, I can give you your money back, right? That is true, right? You know, if I bought something, a mekach tos, I would never want to buy it in a million years, then the whole sale is void, right? But if you're evaluating damages, so to speak, right? So then we could see, okay, look, you know, the guy could sell it to a non-Jew, right? So it has some value to it, right? So this guy, if I understand what you're saying, Gil is saying the guy had his Shabbos meal, then realizes it was trade, goes back to the store, right? So the Nesiva says, it's fine. You don't get any money back, right? You're arguing he should get back the difference between kosher meat and non-kosher meat, right?
Kosher meat according to its duty.
Okay. Okay. Oh, because he's rich. Okay, I got it. I got the joke.
Empire to Purdue.
Oh,
you mean the Tzedukim who reject the Rabbanan?
Right.
Right, okay. But who says that a butcher is allowed to sell that to a Tzedoki? It's still Naivir, right? He's not allowed to do it.
Yeah, but what about Shekinah?
You're saying it wouldn't bother him so much. Okay, but... okay, well, I got to think about that one.
What about Shekinah? Does that make any difference?
Shekinah on a... that would apply to a Doraisa.
I went to this restaurant and they give me this matzah and I taste it and I say, this is a matzah.
Yeah.
Money back, but I pulled out my welcher.
Yeah.
They showed up the next day.
So you're saying that what? That if I they serve me treif, they serve me.
You know, these guys are Persian, so they don't know about it. But
you're saying, but that's an example of something which is not asur midoraisa.
That's right.
So the Nesivos would say you don't have a claim because it wasn't essentially a mekach tos. You know, by the fact that you were not aware of it. Okay, again, this we could give a whole shiur. This is debatable, but that is his thesis. Yeah. No, kosher and glatt kosher is a little bit different. Kosher, glatt kosher addresses a doraisa concern, right? That maybe there's something that would prohibit the animal. Just a question of do I need to inspect it for that?
Today, most people expect kosher.
Okay, yeah.
Years ago, there was an inspection.
All the stores say glatt kosher, even the milchuk ones, right? Yeah, they all say glatt kosher, right? Okay. Exactly. That's it. Yeah, that's it. Okay. Years ago, right. That was not necessarily the case. Not necessarily the case. Okay. You can still buy Hebrew National hot dogs, I think, right? You know, like, okay. Yes, Harry.
I heard it a little bit different that with the trade meat, you don't get any money back because
And therefore, you don't get the money back?
You don't get any money back by trade. I'm sorry. You can only get it back by
trade. Okay.
But by marijuana, you get money back less than nutritional value.
Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. Okay, that's sort of what... sort of what Gil was talking about. But again, fundamentally, you don't have a claim on him for the treif. That's what we're trying to say. Okay, let's continue the Gemara. We are on the 1, 2, 3, 3rd of the medium lines. Medium lines, Maaser Rishon. So the Gemara says, going back to the Mishnah said that if I have Maaser Rishon, that the Levi did not separate Trumas Maaser for, right? The Levi takes his 10%, and then he has to separate another 10% off of that to give to the Kohen as his contribution. What if the Zimun was about that food? So Gemara says, Pshita, of course, that's no good, because you still have Truma inside of it that you didn't separate. Lo tzricha, kigon, shekdimu bekri. This, if you remember way back, we discussed this a couple weeks ago. Shekdimu bekri. The Levi shows up on my farm, and he takes his miser. He takes the miser from me, from my produce, and he jumps the gun, because really the Kohen is supposed to come first. The Levi insists on taking his portion beforehand. So we know that there's some situations where, yes, you will be off the hook from that extra gift to the Kohen. But in this case, it is already, it's Bikri. Bikri is an expression in the Gemara which means I already processed it. And it's all stacked up, ready to go into, to be crushed into flour and so forth. It's too late at that point. Once something has been processed and is ready to use, then it is absolutely obligated in Truma and Meiser and everything, and there's no shortcuts. So even if the Levi comes and jumps the gun, Hegdimo Bakri, but he got there and the farmer had already turned the grain into a Kri, Mahu, the same I might have said, Kidda Amr Leira Papa Labaye, the Havamir Dara Papa, way back on the first Amud, thought when he was discussing with Abaye that maybe the jumping the gun even at that point will exempt you from the Truma, Kamash Malan. No, as we said before, based on Sukkim, we're not going to go through it again, but the Gemara Darshan from Sukkim, why you're too late at that point. Once it's been processed, then there is a more of a mandate to separate Trumas and Meisers. I don't know if we spoke about it at the time, but on the, you know, the opposite side of the spectrum, if I go apple picking, you know, Chol HaMoed trip, apple picking in Israel, and I just pull an apple off the tree, then I can eat it. Okay, one apple, just as a snack, is permissible without Trumas and Meisers. Once I bring my apples home, right, and like we said, we begin the processing it, so that's when the obligations kick in, and there's no shortcuts at that point. Next Gemara, Meiser Sheni, fifth line of the medium lines. Meiser Sheni, if I have not redeemed the Meiser Sheni, or I have not redeemed the Hektish, so then that's not a Zimun. It's Usser. Pshita, isn't that obvious? It's Usser. Lo Tzricha Sheniftu V'lo Niftu Kilchasan. These items were redeemed, which normally would make it okay, right? But they weren't redeemed properly. Maaser Sheni Kigon Shepodu Agabi Asimon. Okay? He used an Asimon. Asimon does not mean like what they used for the payphones in Israel. It means a coin that, for whatever reason, doesn't have a stamp. It's not minted. Okay? It's a disc, a metal disc. It's not minted. Okay? We'll talk about the significance in a second. Rachman Amar, the Torah says, V'tzarto HaKesav Yadecha. Simple pshat on the buzzing is you redeem the fruits on the money, you tie up all the money that you collected in your hand, you go to Yerushalayim and you buy your food there in Yerushalayim and you eat it there. But we have another additional level of interpretation, kesef sheyesh alav tzura. Okay, kesef sheyesh alav tzura. It has to be money that has a tzura, has a form on it, and therefore if it's unminted, it's not kosher for the redemption, even though technically it has a value. One more line. Likewise, if I had consecrated something, I donated my car to the Beis HaMikdash, and I want to transfer the Kedusha from that item that I want to drive my car. So I want to transfer it to something else, but I transferred it to real estate. Velo pado bekesef, and I did not transfer it onto cash. That's the only thing that works. Rachmana Amar v'nasana kesef akamlo. The Torah says the only valid redemption of holy items that's possession of Beis HaMikdash is on cash. Okay? Two quick points before we dive marv. The Chassam Sofer discusses whether or not a person, this is practical. I've done this before. I've redeemed Meiser Sheni. Okay, I'll talk about that in a second. Can you use paper money? Can you use paper money to redeem it? Or does it need to be actually coins? Chassam Sofer says, based on our Gemara, right, a kesef sheyishalav tzura. Okay? It's very specific. Very specific. But even more so, and this has practical implications, essentially what we're saying, Kesalav Tzura, is that it has to be valid currency. It has to be valid currency. Nafkamina Rav Shechter always likes to talk about this. If you, let's say you have a bag of carrots or peppers from Costco and it's Israeli produce. So you happen to separate Shruma and Meiser and Meiser Sheni, etc. The last stage in the process is you're stuck with, but you're left with your Meiser Sheni. You can't do anything with it. I need to redeem the Meiser Sheni on a coin. Okay? So I think Shechter always mentions that the author of the Shmir Shabbos Kelchasa, Rabbi Shua Neubert, writes in the Sefer, and I have a coin at home by me in Yerushalayim, and if anyone wants to redeem their, transatlantic Meiser Sheni on my coin, no problem. Shechter says that's only valid if you live in Israel. But if you live in America, where it's illegal, right? It's illegal to conduct a transaction with foreign currency, so that is not valid. Okay, so rest assured, Rabbi Willig has a quarter, has a whatever civil dollar in his house. That's the one I usually use. And every 3 years, we're coming to the second year in the Shemitah cycle. At the end of 3 years, when there's Bir Meisters and get to Pesach, so you have to Biarti Hakodesh Menavayis. I have to remove all of my Meiser, which I can throw it into the sea. That's what they used to do. Every third year, Rabbi Willa goes with a chemistry professor up to the 13th floor of Belfer Hall. I have a video of this somewhere, the last time we did it. And with some fancy combination of sulfuric acid, drops the coin in. It's gone within seconds. Never existed. And he also has a whole explanation why that's not a misdemeanor. Okay? Because I think there is some, you're not allowed to destroy currency. I forget. It's escaping me right now. Next time I talk to Rabbi Willa Blinader, I'll review. Okay. Have a wonderful Shabbos.